Okay, so yesterday we saw a few shittot who said that non-Jews are either chayav in tzedakah, the Ran, or, and it's the only reason it's not counted because it's an assay, or they're chayav because it's general morality, which, you know, we care about. Don't let anyone ever tell you we don't. We do, right? We do care about this. There's a nitziv. Let me quickly show you a few other rishonim. The rokeach. Who is the rokeach? Rabbi Eliezer Rokeach from
France.
Germany, close. It is close. I mean, he's, you know, he's from, but, yeah. He is, he's interesting. He's both, like, functions as a Balei Tosfot, but he's also involved in the school of the Chassidei Ashkenaz, of the German Pietists. So he has some, you know, weird mystical stuff going on, and, you know, pietist stuff and ascetic stuff going on also in his works. Ascetic, like, you know, yeah, asceticism, like, you know, the belief that you should avoid physical pleasures and things like that, and a lot of interesting things going on there. Yeah, things like that. They did a lot of, right, long fasts and what?
No, I said it's a part of the Chassidim.
Well, these are the Chassidim Ashkenaz. Right, so they had like... Yeah, so you know, you get like some of the long fast, the if you sin, you should torture yourself by rolling around naked in snow and things like that. Things like that. Yeah. Don't do that. By the way, don't do that. Okay, can we put this on record? Don't do that. I am opposed. But they were very into this. Beating yourself, right? Okay. So the Rokeach... What? I mean, Zod, there were many religions that had ascetic and were into self-flagellation, right? They were into this. You know, whatever. In at least one record from the... Guys, in at least one record of from, I think it's Rav Yaakov HaKohen, if I remember correctly, in his Ma'amar, he writes that the Rokeach had a flying carpet. Okay, you know, there are different things that go on. Yes, there's one record, I think it was the Rokeach, that he had a flying carpet and that he used to use because of Shemos, and he once mispronounced the name, so he fell off and broke his leg. I don't know. All types of interesting stories that go on. So there... What? I don't know. Okay. So the Rokeach writes. The Rokeach writes as follows. He writes, "Kol haMitzvot shehen chukot ugzera sarich levarech shehen shulach haken rishagei sharmatanot kahuna." All laws, which are statutes, you have to make a bracha on. But then he says, on the third line. Kol mitzvot tunin bracha. All. Aval kol davar shegam v'reinoch huzhuru alav, kigon gezel gneiva v'chamas, v'anshu yad ani lo echziko, v'tztaka l'viyah v'leket shechal peyav v'idr zakein, shemitzuvim chayav, ein zarech levarech. So he has this amazing claim. Any mitzvah that non-Jews are also obligated in, we don't make a bracha. Now I assume, what's his logic? Very good. Is that he thinks Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvotav, right? So it's something that's unique to our tzivuyim. But what does he put in this list? But look, and this comes back to Yehonatan's point. What does he put in this list? Theft, Hamas, which is not exactly theft, but what? Well, no, it's like pressuring people to sell things in Chazal, fine. But also not giving staka. Not escorting the dead, the matnot aniim, leket shechad peya, respecting the elders, right? All those non-Jews are chayav.
Peya.
What?
Did he say
peya? Peya.
Even corner.
Yep. So Rokeach has this interesting theory that there's a whole bunch of mitzvot that presumably are expansions of these values, and therefore non-Jews are chayev, either because they're basic morality or they're expansions of the Sheva Mitzvot. I don't know, he doesn't really explain. You could, and that's a machloket in the Gemara, right? So it could be that it's related to that. But some of these are surprising, right? Then he goes on, Vasiat Ma'ake, putting up a parapet, the Tikkun Moznayim, making sure that your weights and measures are fair. And the reason is, right, three lines to the bottom, exactly as Rami said, Sha'abracha Vitzivanu Velo Akum. Because bracha is only on things that are Vitzivanu, commanded to us and us alone. And therefore, they don't get brachot. Now, that's a surprising thesis in its own right. But what he indicates to you is that he believes that they're chayiv in tzedakah, right? And many other things. Okay. Let's, what? What? Yes. Let's look at one more. Let's look at two more. Okay. Let's look at the Yad Ramah. So the Yad Ramah, who's the Yad Ramah? We're doing a little bit of biographies today. So who's the Yad Ramah?
That was the commentator on the...
And this is his parish on Sanhedrin. What's his name? Reb Meir Halevi Abulafia. Yaakov's looking it up, so... I hope that's what he's doing, right?
I'm working. I got all the things that I'm going to send out. Was it like, do you live in the 1700s?
You're only off by several hundred years. There are more than that, but yes, who is the Yad Ramah? Okay, that's fair enough. Major Sephardi, yeah, Rishon, there you go. 1170 to 1244. So he writes on. He writes as follows: Mazra Nuna. Look four lines in the bottom. Beitolit staka. What does the Gemara mean when it says that they're chayv in staka? Ita amri dahait staka pshara. Since some say it means compromise, who's that somebody?
Rashi.
Umistabrali lit staka mamash kamar. But I think it's Staka mamash. So if you wanted to see, and then he says, "Vahai de lo chashiv lagave mitzvah, gave mitzvah mishum de mitzvah asehi." Okay, good. Now, the Meshech Chachma I put in for an interest. It's a little bit different, but it's an interesting claim. So I wanted to throw it out there. Remember. Several of you were very interested in this notion that I said that there's a machloket in the Gemara about whether it's mutter or usser or mitzvah to compromise. Right? This wonderful Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Vav. Meshech Chachma, meaning Remer Simchav Dvinsk, the Or Sameach, same person, we talked about him a little bit in Parsha, he writes that even if you think that Jews aren't allowed to compromise, because you have to follow Torah law, he thinks that non-Jews would be allowed to compromise. Why? Because he thinks that fundamentally there's a difference between our system and their system. Right? The reason to say it's us or to compromise for Jews is that we have specific monetary law from God. But dinin for non-Jews is to set up a coherent legal system. And he says when you don't have specific laws, you just have a general mandate to set up a just legal system, so encouraging mediation. What?
Aren't all monetary matters like just not based on
commercial
priorities?
No, some aren't.
So the things that aren't, you can compromise.
Maybe. All right, maybe.
Rabbi, is it implying that the system
isn't coherent?
Is what? That the Torah monetary law isn't coherent?
No, it's that it's not only based on coherence, is based on divine command. And therefore he says, Rabbi Veit Din Shabbanei Noach Shemuzarin Aladinin Ladun Dinei Nimusim Gevya Secha Enoshe Bazem Mutar Mitzvah Lifasher. Right, and then he, right, once he says that, right, he establishes that he thinks that staka in the parsha of Avram means pshara. Okay, fine. Let's look at one more shita, and then we'll move on. So, the Rambam. What do you think? Does the Rambam think that non-Jews are chayev in staka or not?
Yes.
Very good. He does not... Okay, very good. So in Malachim, in Perek Ted, Halacha Aleph, of Hilchot Malachim, he tells you very clearly that how many mitzvah b'nei da'ach are there?
Seven.
Now the Rambam himself has contradictions. In some places he claims that they are chayiv and sirus, and paskins like that cheat in the Gemara. In some places he says not. Wait, in sirus? No, I'm sorry, in kilayim.
Oh.
In harva. He takes that position. The Shach deals with this contradiction, not our topic now. But what does the Rambam say in Yud Yud?
So let's
read the Rambam, right? What does he say? Yud Yud. If a non-Jew wants to perform any of the other mitzvot besides for the seven he's commanded in, Ein monin oto lasot ota kel chetav. We don't stop him. Right? With two exceptions. Right? That was the previous halacha. It's Shabbat and Torah. We don't let him learn Torah and we don't let him keep Shabbat. What? Presumably. V'im evi ola mikablim imenu. And if he wants to bring a korban, ola, voluntary korban, we can take it. Natan staka mikablin mimenu. And if he gives staka, you can take it. V'yera ele shenotinin otalani Yisrael. And I think you can even give it to Jews, which is not obvious, as we know. U'mitzvah aleihem leachyoto. Now this is presumably talking about someone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. And you can give it to Jews because someone who keeps Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach in Eretz Israel, a Ger Toshav, we are chayef to support him. There's a mitzvah l'achyoto. And therefore the Rambam says, I assume that there's a reciprocal obligation. Aval ha-goy shenatan staka, but a goy, which the original Gersa might have been Akum, I don't know. Who knows what that original Gersa was? I can look at the Shinui Nischaot later. What? On Svariyah it says Akum. Okay, there's both Gersa are definitely possible. So, let's hold off on the second F for a moment. So far we've seen the Shita to say that non-Jews are Chayiv in Staka. We've seen the ones who say they're not Chayiv in Staka. The ones who said it's Chayiv because of general morality. But now we suddenly have the vision of the Rambam, which is? They're not chayav, but they can, and it's a mitzvah. They get schar, but they're not obligated. So now, before we continue, I want you now to start plugging in the sources. Okay? We've seen all of this. Took us 2 days. Now let's go back. Remember how we started, the three Gemaras in Bava Basra. Okay? It doesn't say obligated. We have to support them. It's valachyoto, and therefore we, in reciprocation, will accept.
We'll accept. It's not
obligation.
No. But outside of Israel, they.
But if he's an idolater, we won't accept it. Or we'll give it to non-Jews.
So the only issue in the Rambam of accepting would be from an idolater.
Ah, good. So hold it. So now let's go back and plug it in. Okay? The first Gemara we saw of Herod and Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel being criticized for encouraging Nebuchadnezzar to give tzedakah. Okay? So, from that Gemara, if you think that non-Jews are chayav in tzedakah, so, now read the Gemara through for me. They're chayav, but?
Not if they're bad.
So, Yonatan says they're chayav, but bad people aren't chayav. That's not a plausible position. Okay. So, let's try this again. Remember. What? Okay, good. So, According to the Rambam, here's the solution that we'll probably get. Is, are all non-Jews chayiv in staka?
No.
No, I assume they are. Oh, very good. Is that all non-Jews are chayiv in the Sheva Mitzvot? Is there, are they chayiv, according to the Rambam, okay, well, let's hold off the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't think they're chayiv. Okay? If you think that non-Jews are chayiv in staka, then why couldn't you accept staka from Nuchanetzar?
Because he'll get
schar. You don't want him to get schar. He is obligated. That's exactly the problem. Because he'll get schar. We don't want him to. So then what question is left for that shita? Which is, why then in certain cases do we accept the tzedaka? Okay? Now according to them, it might be, look, well, they're obligated in tzedaka. Of course you accept it. You only don't accept it if there's some, right, negative consequence of accepting it, and we'll have to plug that in a second. If you think that non-Jews have no value at all in staka, so then, okay, I guess that's why you don't accept it, but that doesn't seem to be the simple pshat in the Gemara. Right? If you hold, like the Rambam, that they're not obligated, but they get schar, so now read Daf Dalet to me. Now, right, they're not obligated, but they get reward. Very good. Is exactly. What's driving the Rambam is he says, look, they're not obligated to give tzedakah, but it's a mitzvah. But it's an optional mitzvah. If someone already does everything they're supposed to do, so fine. You want to do more? You want to be expansive? That's fine. But you want to be derelict in your fundamental responsibilities, but, you know, rack up some schar points by doing some bonus and trying to, right? It's like, I missed, right? I'm not going to do this essay, but I'm going to ask the teacher, can you put on each of the next tests 30 points of extra credit so I can average out the fact that I got a zero on that, right? Can you do that for me? And the teacher will say, no. You do everything, maybe I'll give you extra credit, right? But if you don't do that, I'm not letting you make up, right? I'm not letting you average out to good, right? Just because, right? That's not how things work. What? What?
I was saying your analogy would be not necessarily up to a good degree, but just up to fairly
bad. Yeah. Okay, good. So now we have this background. Now we can really come back to our question, though. So let's try to resolve the contradictions. So we have five Gemaras that are in play. Okay, let me remind you, because I know this is confusing, and I wish I had a board, but I don't. So let's try, okay? Let's summarize. I know it's confusing, but... And if it's not clear, then Gemara 1. Daniel is punished for accepting money and allowing Nebuchadnezzar to get schar, which implies always that it's bad to take money from non-Jews. If Rahurmas says, I want my money to go to Mitzvah Rabbah, and the Chachamim are dunning, what does she mean? And they give it to Pidyon Shvuyim. Gemara 3. If Rahumra's again, and this time they say you can accept it because of peace for the king, but you ideally should give it to non-Jews as long as they won't realize. Right? Gemara 4, Sanhedrin, which is you can take money from them, but only in private. And Gemara 5 is Erechin, which is you can accept donations to the Beit HaMikdash, but only if, one, they're voluntary, and two, it's not a davar mesuyam that their name will, right? It's not the Christensen family Aron, right? Mayor Soloveitchik likes joking that, like, the way Jews are, forget non-Jews, the way Jews are is that there's no way the Beit HaMikdash will look the way it once did, because now, right, it'll look like every shul. It'll be the, you know, Schottenstein family Kodesh, and the, you know, Katz family Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the, you know, whatever, the Cohen family Aron, you know, and the whatever, what? I don't know. I'm just picking names that we, you know, of like big things that I know of. Like YU Torah. Okay, so it won't just be the YU Torah, the cat's YU Torah, the cat's Kodesh. Kodesh, Kodesh, whatever. What? You know, this is not serious. We won't actually do this, right? There won't act. I really hope the Beta McNosh will not have all those annoying little plaques everywhere, right? Like, you know, look, it's obsessive. You know, I know, like, it's only gotten worse than the last few years. I've noticed, like, as I go around recruiting, because, like, it used to be, like, the Beit Midrash in schools was donated, right? Maybe the school. Yeah, now I go around, like, literally every building. The classrooms, the bathroom, the hallway, this section of the hallway. What? Every single mezuzah. Yes, every single mezuzah is donated by somebody.
And the little, like,
yes, everything has a plaque. Yes, okay. It's amazing. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm really not. The Rajba was asked this Shaila, and the Rajba said, no, it's fine. Right? Stop saying it's not fine. Every generation, someone asks this and says, isn't it a problem? And the rabbi says, no, it's not a problem. Why do you think it's a problem? Then there's a long tshuva by... brain freezing, 1 second, by Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. And the Tshuva is Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. He was asked about this, and he said, and everyone said, oh, isn't it a problem, 19th century Germany? And he's like, no, it's not a problem. Like, it's an old minhag to put up plaques. What? Yes, exactly. During Haftarah, exactly. Right. Yes, exactly. Like, in the Beit HaMikdash, they'll be like, I remember on Yom Kippur, I didn't understand the Avodah, so that's when I schmoozed with my friends. So now the Kohen Gadol is actually doing the Avodah. This is when we're supposed to go out and talk, right? When is the Yizkor break in the Beis HaMikdash? Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah, I really hope there are certain things we don't carry over the Beis HaMikdash. Okay.
Well, at least you know.
Exactly. You'll see people gathering on the foot of the mountain. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, those are the five Gemaras we got to deal with. Guys, so those are the five Gemaras we got to deal with. So now let's try to figure out, okay, how do we put all the pieces together? How do we put this puzzle together? So, I'm going to start with Rami, because Rami will now personify Rabban shall call, right, shall call B'nai HaGola. Rami channeled Rashi, which is a good person to channel. So I will let Rami start us off. How does Rashi solve the Gemaras?
Okay, so the is the requirement to make peace. That if you are in a position where a government official is going to be angry at you, don't be in that position and avoid it at all costs. So in the second story, Rabbi Ami was just given money, without any fear of requirements. So in such a case, it would have been government-wise, to just distribute it like to none. That wouldn't have upset anyone up high. The first story, however, because specifically specified that she wants a mitzvah done. Just giving it to non-Jews might not have
very good. Okay, so Rashi has the following thesis. Okay, he explicitly addresses only Chet and Yud Aleph, right? The two cases of Ifra Hormez. Okay, but we can, once we see that, we can tease out what he thinks about the other Gemaras as well. So look, open up to Baba Basra Yud Aleph, the first Rashi on the page. Okay, so Rashi says as follows: De Rebbe Ami Dili aniye ovde kochavim chilkan. Chilkan Rava Vahana. Right? So he gave it to the non-Jews. Vahanach de Aminan Lael Dishidra Nami Ifrahormas Lamitzvah Rabba on Davchet why did we take the money from Ephraim's for Pidyon Shvuyim and give it to Pidyon Shvuyim for Jews? Shouldn't we have given it to non-Jews? What's his answer? Mishlom Malchut, Shlom Malchut Nami Kablenu. We took it for peace, just like on Daf Yud Aleph. So why didn't we give it to a different mitzvah? What's his answer? Rami? Because she said, give it to Pidyon Shvuyim, or give Mitzvah Rabba, which then says Pidyon Shvuyim. And what's the overarching value that he says comes in here?
Peace.
Well, peace is why we can take it. Then there's another overarching value, which is you can't lie and you can't deceive. You can't lie, you can't deceive her. If she says what she wanted to give it to, so then you have to. He says, so why wasn't it Gneva Dat when they gave it to non-Jews? Because she said, give it to the poor. The poor is everybody. And he said, well, what if she thought she was giving it to Jews only? What's the answer? She didn't. Why didn't she think that? Because Jews routinely give tzedakah to Jews and non-Jews. Because we're chayev to give tzedakah to non-Jews. Because of the Gemara in Gittin. That mefarnesin ani uvdi kochavim ani is rabbi darkei shalom. We support non-Jews. So here's Rashi's thesis of chet versus yud aleph, meaning two ifra hormos cases. Rashi says, look, should we accept tzedakah from non-Jews? Ideally, Rashi, no. We don't want them to get reward. But that concern that we don't want to give them reward can be overridden by peace. But there's a good way of compromising, which is you have to accept it, so accept it. But try to minimize the reward if possible, because we recognize the get schar, that's what we're trying to avoid. So how do we do that? By giving it to non-Jews, which according to Rashi is schar but less schar. But there's yet another value, which is you have to be honest. So if they tell you exactly where it wants to go, so then honesty is our first value, and now you've got to let them get what they want. If they don't specify, so then you try to fulfill their intentions if you already have to accept it, which again, he doesn't want you to do, in the minimal way possible. Now, he doesn't explain Daf Dalet, Nebuchadnezzar, but you tell me, why would it be different in the case of Nebuchadnezzar? Yes, right? Meaning he says, if it's Shlom Malchut, you're allowed to accept it. So one possibility is that it's even worse. Rishayim Mamash, you don't want to accept it, but there's a better reason, I think. I think there's a better reason. What's the better reason? Come on. What? Think about it. According to Rashi, why do you accept the tzedakah? Because peace. When will there be a lack of peace if you don't take the money? If they gave you the money already and you'd have to turn it away. What's different about Daf Dalet? Daniel gave Nebuchadnezzar advice to give tzedakah. He initiated, there would be no lack of Shlom Malchut. He initiated it. Right, according to Rashi, we don't, right, what's Rashi's overarching thesis? They clearly get some sort of schar, but we want to avoid them from getting schar, period. Ah, good. So, according to Rashi, what do you think? He doesn't spell it out, but why is he worried? So, it's not clear, right? All three cases we're dealing with idolaters, so we don't know if you would say that about a non-idolater, right? But at least for idolaters, Rashi doesn't want them to get schar because either because they're idolaters, or in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, they're enemies of the Jews, and if for Hormuz, I don't know. She's not exactly an enemy, but maybe sometimes she was, right? It's not like the warmest of relationships. Go, okay. Now, Hold it for 1 second. Now, what about the Gemara in Sanhedrin? So why is there a bigger problem in public versus private? So according to Rashi... But why are you nevertheless allowed to accept it? Remember what Rashi there said? Right, what the Gemara said? Because ideally we don't want to accept it, but, and I was listening to an excellent share by Rav Sherlo, where he said that this is a great sugya where you see the confluence of lamdus and philosophy and social values and political theory, right? Essentially, there are different axes here. One of the axes is need versus the purity of, right, intent in terms of giving. Rashi is saying, ideally, we would never take. If we have to, we will. Now, one of the reasons we might take is because it would be insulting if you didn't take it. But there's another reason. What's the one the Gemara in Sanhedrin says? If the poor people need it. Because it's very nice to be pure when you don't need the money. If you need the money, that's a different story. So this, I think, if you wanted to piece together Rashi's position, that's Rashi's position. Now, Yonatan is angry, and Yonatan wants to challenge a different Rishon. Which Rishon is he channeling? We've already read him. He's channeling the Rambam. Because, according to the Rambam, are non-Jews obligated in staka? They're not obligated in staka. What are they? It's a mitzvah. So according to the Rambam, he thinks that they get schar, but it's optional. The Rambam then introduces a thesis, which is clearly introduced to resolve the contradiction between the Nebuchadnezzar case and the two Ifra Hormuz cases. And that is? What? Exactly. Is that the Rambam says, giving staka, they're not obligated to mitzvah, i.e. it's a bonus. And here's the way bonuses work. If you are... if you're good, we let you get a bonus. So therefore, we'll take it. If you're bad, we don't want it. We don't want to give you that opportunity. So... does that explain Daf Dalit for him? Yeah. Nebuchadnezzar, of course. Nebuchadnezzar is evil, terrible, horrible. Don't give him advice. Right? It's not about... for Rashi, there seems to be a difference between soliciting and not soliciting. According to Rambam...
By the Rambam, would you be allowed to encourage someone who is good to get stuck
up? Sounds like it, right? So according to the Rambam, why do we discourage Nebuchadnezzar? Because he's evil. But now we have a little bit of a problem. Because, what does he say? He says, but if someone's a ger toshav, so you accept it. And if he's not, then... right? Remember, what did he say? Let's look back. Yeah. What's the problem with the Rambam? Sorry, what did you say, Ezra? Well, I think there's a bigger problem. Is this explains, right, meaning the Rambam will say, ideally we don't want to accept it, but if he gives it, we accept it, okay? Meaning if he already gives it, we accept it. If he gives it, we accept it, right? What? So if a goy, for him, which is idolatry, gives it, well, we'll accept it. We don't solicit it, right? So he might also have a distinction between solicitation and taking. That explains Daf Dalet, where, look, that's a solicitation and he's evil, so we're going to avoid it. It explains Yud Aleph, where she gave it, so we accepted and gave it to Jews. What does he not explicitly take on? Daf Chet, which is the exact same woman, where we seem to have no qualms. So, if you had to answer Daf Chet, what would you say according to the Rambam? So that's Rashi. So he could agree with Rashi, right? But it's also possible that, remember, right, Rashi calls Pidyon Shvuyim for these purposes staka. But remember, we could always say, look, there are different axes here. And not all staka is created equal. Because the Rambam is very clear. We take staka from them, and what else do we take? Karbanot. Right? But there are differences between different types of staka. It could be for the Rambam, you take Pidyon Shvuya, maybe because it's a mitzvah rabbah, or something like that. I don't know. Right. But for the Rambam, he explicitly weighs in, unlike Rashi. Rashi doesn't distinguish between different types of non-Jews. The Rambam says, wait a second, the problem here is that is getting bonus points. So the Rambam says, I have a very simple theory. People who deserve bonus points will encourage them. And people who don't will begrudgingly take it. And when we begrudgingly take it, we'll give it in the way that minimizes schar. Now the Rambam may also have this thing which will explain the case of Pidyon Shvuyim, that maybe when there's extreme need, we'll take it. Could be, or right, or he agrees with Rashi. He doesn't say explicitly, but what the Rambam introduces that Rashi clearly doesn't is that right. Rashi seems to have a general opposition to all non-Jews getting schar. We just take it begrudgingly because of need, because of shalom, because of right. So, right, so you answer, what is he, right, clearly he just, right, clearly he doesn't want them to, right, or he thinks that, right, or maybe he doesn't think they get schar, and that's part of the problem, but that seems unlikely, right?
What makes most sense to me is that the Rosh, if there exists this group to get schar, then surely there must be like some good way to get them.
Look, the Rambam, right? The Rambam, in that sense, has a lot of coherence because the Rambam says it depends. Is this the type of person we want to give extra credit to, or someone we don't?
So it makes sense to Rashi to say, like, there doesn't exist, like, that I know of, an option
to use
my qualification for being good enough to get started. Well, like, what would that mean?
What?
It would make sense to me if Rashi, like, had some qualification for, like, a person.
Yeah, it could be. Okay, now let's try to plug in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. What about what's the difference between public and private? Good. So why does Rashi think we don't accept it from them?
We wouldn't accept it in public.
But why not? Right, that's the Gemara. Why does Rashi think that? What did Rashi say? Chilul Hashem. Right, now what's Chilul Hashem? So people say different things. It's not clear, but what could we suggest is Chilul Hashem? Very good. So the most common interpretation is, look, it's not a problem of taking from them. Right? It's a problem that, why are we allowed to take it? Because of necessity. But it's a really bad situation to get in if, right, we can't take care of our own. Right, that's just wrong, and especially when you think about a non-globalized world, where the given is that people are taking care of their own, to have to go and schnorr from the outside is a chilul Hashem. The Rambam is a different perspective, though. The Rambam says, if you look in Hilchot Eduk, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha He, the Rambam writes as follows. Do you guys get a chance to look at it? Rambam, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha He, Hilchot Eduk. Yeah. I said there's a recorder in front of me, so I only communicate in a way that is not on the recorder. That's what I said. Okay, I'll pause it first. So the Rambam says, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Hey of Hilchot Eidot, what does he say? The Rambam doesn't, so according to Rashi, is it usher to take tzedakah in public? If not absolutely necessary? What do you think? According to Rashi.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Gavi. That wasn't a trick question. I know normally it's a trick question, but the answer there was yes. The Rambam actually thinks it's not. So for Rashi, it's weird. Because Rashi has actually, when you think about it, a very wild chiddush, which is, it's actually usher to take staka in public because it creates a chilul Hashem. And even though it's usher, if it's necessary, because the poor won't be supported anyways, it's mutter to essentially disregard that isser. That's a chiddush. Right? That's wild. Because that really shows you how much the need component of staka can override some of the other factors, right? Like purity of motive and things like that. The Rambam tried to avoid that problem. And the Rambam says that's not why you shouldn't do it in public. So the Rambam, did you get to this? No. So the Rambam in Hilchot Eidot, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Hey, says as follows. V'chein ha-bzuyin, psulin le'edut midivrehem. People who are degraded, lack dignity, cannot be witnesses rabbinically. V'heim ha-anashim ha-ochein v'ochlin bashuk lefnei kolam. Examples. People who eat in public. Yeah. Yonatan's like, what? Yes, eat in public. You eat in public. Think people who are like... In the market, lefnei kolam. Think someone who's like in the middle of Times Square eating a sloppy Joe, which is like falling on his clothes. Right? Think. No. Right. So the post game deal is this a snack? Is it a meal? What exactly is degrading?
I believe Rabbi Zilberstein holds that if you pretty much ever attended a coursework, you are.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Wow. Rami, you are on fire. Who told you that?
I read it in the
Look at you. Yes, there is one modern pasuk B'nei Brak who basically says that anyone who's ever eaten it as a smorgasbord is pasul edus. Yes, this is indeed an actual position that exists. A current living in B'nei Brak. No, not modern Orthodox. A modern Haredi. How about that? And not modern qualifying the Charediness, modern qualifying when he lives, but Charedi. Yes, he's opposing B'nai Brak. Yes, I'm not saying he's right. I'm just saying he says this, but he says a lot of things. He's a very interesting posek. He's a very interesting posek, okay? Same person!
Oh, same guy?
Same guy! Yeah, like I said, same guy. I said he's a very interesting posek, yeah.
Crazy! You can't point with sandwich!
Yes, he is the same person who said that if someone routinely steals your sandwich, someone asked him, I heard you said it's mutter to poison the guy's sandwich, and he said, no, you misheard me. Mitzvah! It is a mitzvah to... That's what he says! I kill you not, I kid you not. He says, Lo rakshu muter ela mitzvah mishum halitehu l'rasha v'yomut. The trauma of the first time I read that tshuva. I have not recovered from the trauma of that tshuva. It is so bad! Though, on that particular tshuva though, every posek in Bnei Brak, in Yerushalayim, wrote variations on, you are out of your mind! And he doubled down, he wrote a response. He offers, if I remember, two different tshuvot on it, where I think, cumulatively, he offers between 18 and 20 arguments to explain why it's obviously a mitzvah to poison the guy for stealing your sandwich. Unbelievable. Yes, same person.
I did that opinion, but the problem was it didn't present
it
as the most like crazy radical opinion ever.
So some people actually held him for that question.
Oh my god. Okay. So bad. So bad. Look, he has written a lot of important things. That tshuva, do not, under any circumstances, rely on it. It is murder.
Does he mean like
murder.
Cyanide, or does he mean like
no, he means poison. Because he was asked about someone who did this in America and sent... Okay, guys, this was an actual case. He was asked about someone who in America actually did this, put a poison and wouldn't tell them what the poison was, so they couldn't find the antidote. And they managed to find it like minutes before the guy died and save his life. And they asked him about an actual case and he said, of course, that's the mitzvah, that's what you should do. Not the point. Let me just get... Okay, you know what? Okay, you know what? Because we got whenever time, what I want you to do tomorrow then is read the Rambam. You're going to see. I've already started, but the Rambam is a unique way of dealing with the Gemara on Chavav, which is to say that it's not about an Isser, okay? It's simply because it's degrading. It's not that it's a problem, it's that it's degrading, and certain people who lack dignity, that's a problem in terms of their role as Edom. Okay? So I want you to read... We'll spend one more day. I'm committing to one more day on this sugya. Right? There isn't that much, but here's what I want you to do tomorrow, okay? I want you to read the Rambams. I want you to... I want you to read... Okay, maybe more than one day, but hopefully just one more day. I want you to look at Shulchan Aruch, but what I want you to do tomorrow is really try to take all the data we've seen together and... As I mentioned for Sherlow, I want you to think about the meta questions, because as you've seen, these questions are really balancing a lot of, not just Lumdish points, but how do we balance the recognition that Staka is partially about need and partially about a mitzvah, right? There are different components in Staka that really are at odds. And I want you to try to balance those and get it together. Hopefully tomorrow we won't get caught up in politics before Shir. We'll get a whole hour. Wait, what's today? What day of the week is today?
Wednesday.
Oh, shoot. Sunday. Because tomorrow is the right Ginsburg's giving share to you guys, so Sunday. Eventually, we will finish this again. Okay, we will finish.